All right, welcome into the Fan pregame. Justin Cuthbert and Jesse Rubinoff on a Friday. It's going to be a busy show. Going to be a busy night tonight, especially on the network. Blue Jays have game number 2 of 162. That's on Sportsnet 590, the Fan. Brad Marchand makes his debut with the Florida Panthers, at least expected to, versus the Utah Hockey Club. Imagine saying that a couple years ago.
So bizarre.
Utah not existing. Brad Marchand supposed to be only a Bruin. Yeah. Another winnable game, too, for the Toronto Raptors on Sportsnet 1. They host the Charlotte Hornets.
How bad is that?
Also got the final four, or at least the final four games of the Sweet 16 tonight. But we're on the heels of opening day for the Toronto Blue Jays. We'll get into Marchand in a minute. But, like, I don't know if it's worse fears, Ruby. But, you know, that's the back of your mind. Like, you know that this could be a result many a night for the Toronto Blue Jays. And having it unfold just as is on the first night, I guess, not doing anything to allay concerns potentially for Blue Jays fans who are pessimistic and even ones who are pretty optimistic about the season.
Yeah, I think any logical person would say, look, it's game one of 162, and that's just what it is. It's not indicative of what might happen the whole 162-game season. However, there was a vibe going into the season of the team perhaps not being that great. And when they come out on opening day and lay an egg in the fashion that they did, all it does is solidify a lot of the beliefs that people had about this team, that there were numerous deficiencies that were unaddressed. The team, to me, is better than last year, but is better than last year enough to truly get excited and spirited about where the direction of this team is headed. You made a point about what we saw yesterday seems like it could play out multiple times. This is like a thing that has been developing over the course of multiple seasons now, where if the pitching's not great, the offense doesn't have enough. And you would hope that with the addition of Anthony Santander, and hopefully he can hit 40-plus home runs and that changes the equation, but certainly not getting out on the right foot when you have a result like they did last night, and it does definitely bring up from the back of your mind, again, all of the issues that were talked about over the course of the offseason and those concerns heading into game two of 162. And I mean, hopefully for Jays fans, they can have a better result tonight.
Yeah, and we shouldn't go too far down the road because, again, two of 162 to be played tonight. But I just worry about the constant stress that's going to be on the starting rotation.
Totally.
Because a team like the Orioles, and we may see it again tonight, they could put up a crooked number at any point.
Yeah.
How many crooked numbers are the Blue Jays going to be putting up over the course of the season? I don't know exactly how many, but probably not as many as the Baltimore Orioles. And I think the pitching staff, the starting pitching, would understand that, hey, I have to be, like, really good to great if we're going to win this game.
Same story.
And if it's over and over and over again, really good to great, that's the bare minimum. That's what is needed from me tonight. Like, that's going to add up over 162 games. I think we saw that. We've seen that the last couple years with the Blue Jays as the offense has dried up. There needs to be that thought where, yeah, okay, I gave up a couple runs, that, you know, six are coming. And I think that's what you get out of the Orioles. They are the complete, like, antithesis of each other, right? I mean, there could be a decent amount of pitching because they're, you know, the Orioles might be able to surprise us in that regard. But I think it's easier to be the Orioles. I think it's easier to be the team from a, like, full totality, holistic standpoint, to be the team that can outscore problems at times. If they're both deficient in one way, I think at least having the offense will give you more of a hope from a night-to-night basis and just put less pressure on those who are... I would rather have the pressure on the lineup as opposed to the pitching
staff. And hope that when you get down early, you can come back. And I don't think... I think if there's, like, a way to look at it from a game perspective, but also from a season-long perspective. Like, if you get down, the offense is struggling, that's a very good recipe for just, like, hope being totally sucked out of the Rogers Center and, frankly, the clubhouse. Because if you're not scoring, it's going to get dark pretty quickly. And for all of the changes that they made, and I don't think anyone's disputing that Andrés Giménez is a good player and, you know, he's won 3 gold gloves, but to have him in the cleanup spot is kind of a microcosm of what ills this team. Like, yes, Santander is here. That's great. Hopefully he can help with the offense. But, and I know him and Giménez went deep yesterday.
Yeah.
I totally understand.
Maybe
that.
You could fool him into acting like a cleanup hitter if you make him the
exactly. But he had 9 home runs last year.
Yeah.
And his slugging percentage is below league average his entire career. So it's like, okay, I understand the idea of putting Bo first. I get that totally. We'll see what he can do from the leadoff spot. But the fact that your lineup is so thin that a guy who hit 9 home runs last year is in your cleanup spot it seems like it would present some difficulties in terms of scoring runs. And we know that this front office has doubled and tripled and quadrupled down on run prevention. And that ultimately might be the long-term demise of this team, and that they just can't hang with teams that, you made a lot of good points there, like the Orioles, who can really explode at any time. And one of the other issues with the team is the bullpen going to be better than it was last year? And they didn't get off to a good start yesterday either. So I think, yes, it's just one game totally, but for fans to get excited, you're going to need to see results. You're going to need to see more scoring, more home runs, and better effort, frankly, out of the bullpen. Because until those questions are answered, fans have every right to be like, okay, did this front office do enough? Because now we're at the point where you have to show the results. You have to show the wins. You have to show the runs. And if you're not doing that, fans have every right to say, this team's just not that good.
It'll be Kevin Gausman versus Charlie Morton. Charlie Morton charged with replacing Corbin Burns in the Orioles' rotation this year. He's been very, very consistent. He's been really good. But big shoes to fill there. We're going to have Ben Verlander on in the next block to talk about the Blue Jays, talk about the Dodgers, who are off to an unbelievable start, as I guess expected.
Yeah.
We'll do that at 6:35. But we'll also have Kyle Bukauskas in about 4 or 5 minutes to talk about the happenings in the NHL tonight and this weekend. But let's hover over Marchand for a second. I mean, there's a pretty hotly contested race for the Atlantic Division crown unfolding here. Of course, Tampa Bay, you thought maybe they weren't involved, but they are definitely involved now. And they've been as hot as, or hotter than the Leafs and the Panthers have been. But is this sort of the secret weapon here? Is this like the boost that sort of changes the dynamic here in the Atlantic Division? Brad Marchand coming into the mix with Florida, a team that is obviously very accomplished, is obviously has that institutional know-how of playoff and playoff races. He'll jump onto a second line that won't have Matthew Tkachuk, but will have Sam Bennett. So we'll see Marchand and Sam Bennett likely playing together tonight. Is this kind of what decides the Atlantic Division race for you?
Yeah, it's interesting. I would say of the three teams between the Leafs, the Lightning, and the Panthers, even before the Panthers went out and got Brad Marchand, the Panthers were the team I had the fewest questions about in that division amongst those three. And now you add Marchand to the mix, and it just seems like you go through that lineup, it's playoff guy after playoff guy after playoff guy. And when Tkachuk is healthy again, you already have Sam Bennett, you have Brad Marchand. I mean, that is a extremely difficult trio, not to mention everybody else on that roster, to go up against. And I mean, as it would stand before last night, you know, the Leafs and Panthers would be playing in the first round. So it's like, that is going to be a massive obstacle to overcome. And the Lightning, it's interesting because until they went on that 8-game heater right at the end of February, it was like, oh, the Leafs don't have to worry about playing the Panthers in the first round because either one of the Leafs or the Panthers are going to win the division. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, like, the division matters a lot now. And it's not to say that the Panthers are that much better than Tampa, but I think being the team that you actually beat in the playoffs and got over the first round hump, I think you'd rather play them than the Florida Panthers. So the Leafs better figure out rather quickly how to stop losing points to teams like the San Jose Sharks and get it together if you want to have a slightly easier road in the postseason.
Yeah, thankfully for the Leafs, Florida's been given some back. But yeah, it's an interesting dynamic, right? I think Marchand getting some runway is obviously going to help the Florida Panthers, whether or not Matthew Tkachuk is ready to start on night one of the Stanley Cup playoffs. I think that's probably a bigger deal here. But Marchand, to me, strikes me as a guy who's not going to have Scott Laughton-like problems where it's going to be slightly paralyzing being on a new team, even despite him having never played for another team. It just feels like a guy who's going to be able to go in there and just be confident enough to do his job, do what is expected of him, and just to assimilate into something that is different. And I guess I don't really have anything but him wearing a Canadian shirt as rationale behind that, but that's just how it feels to me. Like, he's going to be a seamless fit, a guy who can just accept that, you know, he means less to Florida than he meant to Boston. And again, why I think that, I'm not really sure, but that's what it strikes me as. And I guess maybe that's because he's going from a really strong culture, or what was a really strong culture, to a pretty established culture itself with Paul Maurice and the Florida Panthers, right? Like, winning gives you something, and winning certainly has given the Florida Panthers something that the Toronto Maple Leafs don't have. I guess the Tampa Bay Lightning do have it, and maybe that's why, despite them looking like a team that isn't as good as it was, they still continue to do what they have been doing. So, yeah, there's a big challenge ahead for teams in the Atlantic Division, teams who are in the wild card, teams that might face Florida in the first round.
It's like the new AL East.
Exactly. But the Toronto Maple Leafs still have the opportunity to, seize fate and make sure that they're in the best position possible, even though that doesn't promise anything. To tee up tonight's game and the weekend ahead, let's bring in Kyle Bukauskas, co-host of 32 Thoughts and, of course, of Hockey Night in Canada. Kyle, thanks for jumping on with us. Let's start with Marchand. What do you make of his debut tonight, expected with the Florida Panthers, and what his presence will do to a team that already has Stanley Cup pedigree?
I've really been thinking about this a lot. Like, good to be with you both here. Jesse, good to see you, buddy. I've been thinking about this a lot. Like, the fact that it's been this long since he's been out with injury. We've a number of weeks removed here from the trade deadline. He's had the chance to allow all of that to kind of just soak in and reflect on what happened in Boston and go through what we can only imagine, all the different emotions of going through a change like that. And now ramping up to the point where you get to play, you know, to what you were saying earlier, Justin, about, you know, you're not seeing maybe something similar with a Scott Laughton in Toronto where it takes a while to kind of feel like there's a fit there. You know, I agree for all of those reasons here. You know, he's had, you know, a bit of more runway to kind of acclimatize to his new surroundings. And as you say, you're jumping into an environment for a team that's, you know, trying to run it back and win a second consecutive Stanley Cup. It's been their mindset all year one. And you know, you've got a general manager that has approached it the exact same way with, you know, what he's tried to do here just leading up to the trade deadline and making the roster that much deeper here. So I think from that standpoint, you know, assuming everything is fine physically or fine enough to get to the point where, you know, there's no real hindrances once the puck drops, all of that is going to be a non-issue for me, I would think. Naturally, it's been a few weeks, the timing aspect, just adjusting to the speed of the game. Maybe there's a little bit there. But for the most part, you know, I see this is a guy that's just, I mean, what an opportunity for him. These are the types of games that bring out the best in him. And you're joining a group that's just, you know, just as hungry to accomplish what they did last year, again, this year. I think the biggest adjustment for him, I brought it up on the podcast the day after the trade deadline. The biggest adjustment for Marchand is breaking in a new set of gloves. Honestly, like, he hates doing that. He will go like a year working a pair of gloves in practice before he uses them in a game. And of course, you know, the black gloves he would have had in Boston doesn't work down in Florida with the navy colored one. So I think he's had no choice but to break in a new pair here over the next few weeks. But I'm sure they still feel in his mind way too stiff than what he would normally prefer.
Kyle, Marchand obviously knows all about the Atlantic Division, spending so much time with the Boston Bruins. And every team has questions. There isn't a single team that goes into the postseason with questions that need to be answered. But I think when you have the Panthers, who are the defending Stanley Cup champions, you have the Tampa Bay Lightning, who have won two Stanley Cups, and then you have the Leafs, who haven't done that. I think the Leafs, when you examine just how they've been the last little while, the inconsistency, how concerned should fans be when you're potentially going to be going up against one or both of the Florida Panthers and the Tampa Bay Lightning in the playoffs, and yet here you are, some really good wins, but they're sandwiched around losing twice to the San Jose Sharks, the last place team in the National Hockey League, in a month. What's your level of concern of where the Leafs are at right now?
And don't forget the loss a week ago in Nashville.
Exactly.
Where they gave away a two-goal lead. Like, that came out of nowhere, too. So for all those, like, I agree. I mean, it's just been kind of a stop and start last few weeks for Toronto, where it was like, these guys don't have a chance. And then it's like, first place is right there again. We've got it. And you know, they go into tonight first in the Atlantic. I think that can really make a difference here. And I'm not suggesting that if they don't win the division, you know, they don't have a hope in getting out of it. But just that idea of, I mean, you know, it's not going to be easy either way in the first round. But the fact that you can, you know, look at the scenario where you would only have to face, if you are able to get through, one of Florida, Tampa, and not both potentially, I think there is something to be said there. I mean, you go back a couple of years, how emotional that was of them finally pushing it over the goal line against the Lightning in game six. And then, you know, the Panthers hit them like a freight train and they just weren't able to recover in time. Now, I mean, there's not nearly the same level of anticipation of just winning one round this year as there was a couple of years back. But, you know, I think that's just a good lesson of, you know, you work so hard to win one series, You know, and then how quickly you've got to ramp up again, because it only gets more challenging. So, yeah, there's a reason why the Stanley Cup has run through the state of Florida here for five straight years. And the fact that, you know, they've been among the more aggressive, you know, not even their division, but, you know, the Eastern Conference in terms of trying to bolster their roster. They've been very good hockey clubs for the majority of the season. So for the Leafs, like, I just think, like, you've got an opportunity right there. And why, again, for a Leaf fan, last night was so frustrating again. What a great opportunity to win your division and not guarantee anything, but give yourself, in theory, a much more favorable path to where you ultimately want to get to. You know, if that ultimately doesn't happen, I think the odds and the realistic expectations here start to shift a bit.
Yeah, I think that last point is an incredible one. It's like, it's not like last night didn't mean anything, right? It's one thing when it's January and you're having a hard time getting up for a game because it's an inferior opponent, and that happens. That happens to probably every single team.
The team is openly talking about the race. Yeah, they're not doing that in
exactly
January.
Right. Exactly. Right. And they still got the point and they're still in first place, but it took them up until the final minute really to wake up, where they ended up scoring twice. And it's like, you know what's on the line and you're still not getting it done.
Right. And now, I mean, the goaltending conversation is becoming a little bit more of a concern, right? And it's one thing to see the puck go in at a higher rate than maybe earlier on in the year. But just kind of watching some of those goals, and we know there was the big blunder there with Wohl there last night, and you don't for a second think that's going to be an every night thing. But just some of the other stuff around it. I mean, I'm the furthest thing from any type of goalie guru or expert, but just over the years in talking to those that, you know, do study and know the position, you know, incredibly well, and just some of the things that they look for when seeing if a goalie's on his game or not. You know, you just start to, as you watch some of these games here, as we come down the stretch, you know, it's like years past for Toronto, it was the power play that went south this time of year. Now it's going great. But, you know, after goaltending between the two of them, their Wohl and Stolar is such a real asset for a tandem for much of this year. And now all of a sudden, as we head down the stretch, like that's starting to be
always
one that gives you a little bit of nervousness if you're a Toronto supporter there. So that's another big part of this whole equation too, if they can get out of the funk in time.
So races in each division here that are meaningful or very meaningful, and I think very meaningful would be the Atlantic. But I want to focus here on the wild card, and we'll start in the Western Conference because the Blues have been making it real hard on Canadian teams. They've been terrorizing the Oilers all year with Philip Roberg and Dylan Holloway playing so well, and now they've formed a wall here with eight straight wins, basically keeping Vancouver and Calgary out of playoff spots. Is this like the big sliding doors moment of the season, Kyle? The fact that the Blues didn't do much at the trade deadline when it seemed like, yeah, they could have been selling off more than just spare parts. They could have sold off a captain. They keep it together, and now they look like they could be a real menace in the playoffs, and at least the team that keeps another Canadian team out.
Well, and it's just the parallels to 2019, right, guys? I mean, they weren't a team that was dead last, but it was another situation where there was legit conversation of Doug Armstrong selling off a number of assets that year, keeps everything together, and they get rolling. And then there was the conversation again this season, and the biggest fish, as you say, was Braden Schenn, their captain. And it was neat. I know Elliot talked about it kind of in the aftermath of the deadline that, you know, even the players kind of went, whether it was Doug directly or at least to the organization, and go, like, you can't trade this guy. Like, keep him here. We think we've got a chance to get back in this race. And they've held up their end of the bargain here. Like, that's the thing, because, you know, Calgary, I mean, God, they played so well against Dallas last night. It just wasn't their night. They've been on a really nice run, like some real, real gutty wins when they came through New York here a week ago. And Vancouver's grinding out victories, like Thatcher Demko, two incredible performances this week. You know, we'll see what their lineup looks like tonight in Columbus. You know, Kevin Lankinen is going to get the start there. But like for all the good that those two teams have done over the last 2 weeks, like it feels like the valley's just even widened even further because St. Louis has been such a powerhouse. And now on top of that, like they could track down Minnesota here. Like that's not out of the question. They've been on that hot of a run. So like with that race there, it's an unfortunate one for the Canadian clubs. You know, you speak of in Vancouver and Calgary, I know they have the games in hand, but with the St. Louis Blues train rolling the way that it is right now, it seems, you know, real tough to stop or stop it enough that you can crawl back with the deficit and the gap that seems to be, you know, between them and the rest of the teams trying to chase them down. It's just not happening.
Yeah, I mean, the West is fascinating because you have the Blues making that run and sort of pulling away here, and the East is unbelievable as well. It's, I mean, it's so much fun when – this is blasphemous for someone who grew up and lives in Toronto to say, but I think the hockey – the sport is just better when the Montreal Canadiens are involved. Like, the atmosphere at the Bell Center is fantastic. They've been playing some great hockey this season. You have Ottawa, too, just really asserting themselves and looking like it might actually be their year where they get in and could do some damage, but – Montreal running up against a bit of a wall here, losing four in a row and allowing 20 goals in the process. Is it a defensive issue? Is it a goaltending issue? Is it just the fact that they're maybe not ready for prime time in this spot? Like, they're still hanging on by a thread, but it is just that. It's only a thread now, and if they don't turn it around, it's going to be tough.
Yeah, like, and honestly, it's been the story of their whole season, right, where they've been like they were just off a cliff right away. They got hot into December and January, back in the mix, tapered off again before Four Nations, thought they were done. You know, Nick Suzuki talked about going to Kent Hughes and saying, like, let's keep our group here together. Like, we think we can get back in it. They do it. They put themselves in a great position. And now, as you say, like, even with the valiant comeback there against Colorado on Saturday night, they only got a point out of it, and now two bad losses. It's one thing to go down to St. Louis. I mean, we just talked about them. No shame in dropping 2 points against the Blues, but you know, last night against Philly, I mean, that was just a bad loss. And I know there was a lot of, you know, consternation on the Tyson Forrester goal with Bobby Brink going through the crease there, with all the discussion the goaltender interference has got again this week. But it was just like they couldn't stop the bleeding. Like, they would get themselves back in the game, and then the deficit widened again for them. So I'm sure part of it is you know, just understanding the relentless nature of this time of year. Like, I go back to, you know, Sheldon Keefe last weekend. I know the headliner clip from that post game against Ottawa was, you know, Kovacevic just needs to play better. But if you go earlier in that presser, when he talked about, he goes, this time of year, it sucks. It sucks. It's hard. But you, as a group, you've got to find a way to embrace it, to enjoy it, and play at a level that you're coming out on the right side of things more often than not. And I think that's kind of where Montreal is at right now. You know, you mentioned goaltending. Certainly that's part of it. But I think this is, I mean, for the most part, four straight games now. Yes, they've been losses, but they also just been games where they haven't looked locked in right from the start. And it's even tougher, it feels, at this time of year to try to erase deficits.
Yeah, tough spot in the schedule here for the Canadians as well. Carolina tonight, Panthers over the next five nights. So whether Montreal makes it or not, maybe decided over the next couple nights here. Enjoy Los Angeles, Kyle. We appreciate you doing this, and we'll chat again soon.
Awesome. I'm actually home this weekend. Mackenzie's out in Cali, so I got Ottawa, Columbus.
Wow, Sean gets the LA trip, eh?
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Hollywood. I guess I should have known.
Hollywood, yeah.
I guess
of
I should have known.
Yes, I know. That totally suits him, eh? He's got to be there.
Thanks, Kyle. We appreciate it.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, Jen.
I guess I shouldn't have made the assumption there.
Right? Yeah. Well, Sean with the three-piece suits and stuff. Yeah,
that is true.
Definitely tracks.
That is true.
Yeah,
yeah. You're right about Montreal, like, making it better, making it more grandiose. That's what Montreal does. But boy, I feel like, you know, it became real, and then it becomes harder.
Yeah.
You know, it's the house money thing. It's the, hey, we're just playing. We're, you know, too dumb or too innocent, too immature to know exactly what this means until, like, oh yeah, you're eighth in the conference and you're fighting for that playoff spot. It seems like it's been a little harder lately for the Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah, it's almost like clearly they want to make the playoffs and they feel like they're ready, but they will take some lessons from this run if it happens that they don't, right? Like, they are in the stage of their rebuild where it would make a lot of sense that, hey, they were exposed to things that they haven't really been exposed to as a unit, as a group before. They fell a little bit short. They learn some things, and then next year becomes the year where you actually assert yourselves and you find, you know, you're more middle of the pack or whatever it may be. Because right now, it's a difficult spot for them to be in. They're a young team. They're still in a rebuild. So we'll see what happens, but it's been fun to watch.
We're going to continue teeing up Orioles and Blue Jays on the other side. We'll have Ben Verlander on, and you raised the debate. It's been raised, but you raised the debate. What's more impressive, what Sid did and accomplished here the other night, or what Ovi's doing right now? We will debate that, because there's always time for an Ovi versus
Sid. Yeah, I have a take.
Debate. Okay, Ben Verlander on the other side. You're listening to the Fan Pregame.
Hey, it's Ben Ennis.
And I'm Brent Gunning.
We got you covered on all things Leafs, Raptors, and Blue Jays every weekday morning, 6 to 9.
It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back on the Fan pregame. Blue Jays play game 2 of 162 tonight. It'll be Charlie Morton versus Kevin Gausman. Kevin Gausman looking for a little bit of a bounce back season. Like, I think time stretched what it was a little bit, at least for me. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that bad of a season.
No.
3.83 ERA. Strikeouts were down, walks up. If he can even that out, it'll be the Kevin Gausman of old. But a lot, as we talked about, rests on the shoulders of him getting back because, yeah, that starting rotation for the Blue Jays is going to have to be very, very good for this ball club to be competitive. Someone who won't share the same frustration as you based on one game would be our next guest. That would be Ben Verlander, co-host of the Flippin' Bats podcast and Fox Sports MLB analyst. And he joins us now. Thanks for doing this, Ben.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Of course. I guess we were talking in the first block about, Blue Jays fans' great concern, and that would be, okay, pitching's got to be great because this offense is not going to score enough. And I don't think we're going to ever get away from that. We understand that the Blue Jays pitching staff has to be good, but I guess the take would be, okay, bad pitching equals an auto loss for Toronto. It's just the margin of error seems to be very slim for this team. Was that for you on display in their first game this season?
Yeah, I think when it comes to this team, and I maybe don't share the same frustration, but frustration nonetheless of just seeing them in all these talks every offseason for offensive players and then them just seemingly coming in second. And then, sort of the same thing this offseason with Soto. And then you take all of that money that you're willing to spend and don't do enough with it. And I do think Santander was a good pickup. But I just felt like there could have been more done, especially with a really good rotation that they have. But I think it was on display. Obviously, it's game one of 162. But this is kind of what I felt like would be this team. They could pitch really well. I know Barrios didn't have his best stuff yesterday, but I don't know. We'll see. But I do share that sentiment of like, just let's go. You had all this money to spend and then you just didn't get the guy. And then you turn around and don't do enough, in my opinion.
So we're looking for silver linings here in game 2 of 162. And you look around the American League East and it's been a juggernaut for years. And it's, Jays fans have griped about this division for so, so long. But you look around, there's no true alpha dog, or maybe you feel differently, but the Yankees, not having Soto anymore, you could make a case that they added enough and are still good, but Gerrit Cole goes down. The Red Sox made some additions, but they're working from a different place where they haven't been near the top of the division for a while, so it remains to be seen if they can get back there. The Orioles, I think, coming off of what happened in the playoffs, a few more question marks. So is the silver lining for the Jays that, okay, it's one game. If you just tread water for a little bit, maybe the division's not actually as good as it's been in years past. And the opportunity could be there if you start to string some together where the confidence comes back, the hope comes back, and you forget about last year and you make a play here. Because right now, you're sort of searching for reasons to be optimistic, even though it's only game 2 of 162.
Yeah, and I would – there's absolutely reason for optimism. One, it's extremely early in the season. Two, division AL East is very good top to bottom, but there's not one team you point at and say, well, they're going to win the division. They're by far the best. I actually think the Yankees got a little bit worse. The Red Sox got better. So the division, I truly believe there's five good teams in the division. As we're talking, the Rays just hit a walk-off home run in their first game of the year. I truly believe all of these teams are pretty good. So there's not one clear favorite in the division. There's not two clear favorites. The Blue Jays have a good team. Another silver lining is I've thought Bo Bichette looks back to the Bo Bichette from, earlier. Let's take out last year. His spring training looked really good. I thought his ABs yesterday looked really good. So now you have a lineup with Bo Bichette being back to himself, Vladdy Jr. being, an MVP type player, Anthony Santander, 40 plus homer guy in your lineup. That's a good lineup. Good lineup good pitching staff, every bit the ability to compete in the division. So I don't look at the division, and I haven't all offseason. I haven't looked at the division and thought the Jays don't have a chance. They do. I think they have a really good pitching staff, a fun offense, a really good defense, as they usually do. And this team could compete. So not only do I think, like, let's pump the brakes on cause for alarm, I actually think quite the opposite. Yes, game one didn't go the way everyone hoped it would. But if you look at the Orioles lineup against Zach Eflin, there's three or four guys in that lineup that absolutely – or Jose Berríos, there's a bunch of guys in that lineup that rake against him. So, you know, they kind of had it up against him in game one. Let's go get him in game two, and next thing you know, you're 1-1, and the vibes are completely different.
Yeah,
very refreshing.
Orioles feel right at home at Rogers Center. And it's not surprising to see them have at least a hot start offensively to start the season, given that they were facing Jose Berríos at Rogers Center. If it is, Ben, relative mediocrity in the AL East, like, what would be the elixir? Like, what would be the strongest thing? If each of these teams are flawed, what is it now that is, like, the strongest thing in baseball to overcome what would be a group of teams that wouldn't be considered complete?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing to overcome is the Dodgers, the teams, and there's some juggernauts in the National League and the American League, fortunately for literally everyone in it. I do think it's pretty wide open for anyone to go win. And there's not, I don't look in the American League and see one fully complete team. The Yankees have their own issues. The Jays have their issues. You can find an issue with everyone in the American League, in my opinion, which makes it wide open. So, you know, that division that the Blue Jays are in, everyone's going to beat up on each other. There's going to be a lot of wins. There's going to be a lot of losses. And I think we're going to look up at the end of the year and, you know, it wasn't my prediction for the Blue Jays to win the division, but I think we're going to look up at the end of the year. And I think there could be three or four teams right towards, you know, all battling it out to get into the playoffs and to win the division. So although, yes, you look at the team and think, yeah, this isn't a complete team. Well, nobody really is. The Yankees are worse than they were last year. I felt they were pretty beatable, you know, not to say they had a cakewalk in the playoffs, but, and this is no discredit to them, but the Guardians and the Royals aren't the toughest teams to get through in October, but they played who they had to play. I didn't feel like they were clearly the best team in the American League last year, and I feel like they took a step back this year. So the American League is wide open, and the Jays have every bit the chance to compete.
So the Vladimir Guerrero contract negotiations were supposed to be over when spring training ended, and then we heard reports that they're talking and that they've exchanged offers, but there's still a gap. How much of a risk does the organization and Vladdy run that this turns into a bit of a distraction? Because I would think that the reason Vladdy would cut off negotiations at the end of spring training was to not be a distraction over the course of the season. But when you're getting questions day after day after day about, are you getting offers? What's the gap like? How big of a chance is there that this starts to leak into the clubhouse and it becomes some sort of an issue for this team, especially when you're not winning?
Yeah, I mean, look, extension deadlines are fake deadlines. They're not real. I mean, they're put in place by players or teams to just put some pressure on the other side. But here we are a couple weeks after the extension deadline wasn't met. I'll be a free agent in October or November. And here we are, extension talks are back open. And now, you know, Blue Jays side thinks they can get something done. It is a distraction. And I saw what he said after it didn't get done. Before of why he even set a deadline in the first place. I don't want to be a distraction. I don't want it to be a distraction. Well, one of those things is impossible. It's going to be a distraction. And if I truly don't believe he's able to just turn the page either and not let this affect him at all. So I don't think there's a world in which it's not a distraction for everybody involved. Mm-hmm. So at that point, it's kind of like, look, the way to make this not a distraction at all is to either keep negotiating until you get a deal done, or saying, like, I don't want to sign a deal with the Blue Jays right now. I don't want to talk to them. I will keep this closed until I'm a free agent. But he hasn't really said that. When the deadline wasn't met, there was a little bit of definitive comments, I guess, but not really. And then now talks are back open. So there's two ways to go about it. And he's not going about it the way of shutting it down and saying, yeah, I'm not talking to them. So the only other way for this to not be a distraction is to get a deal done. And then it's done. And then you go from there. So we'll see. We'll see if it's able to get done. I hope it does. It was frustrating to see them hand out $700 million to Shohei and $700 million to Juan Soto. And I don't believe, you know, if there's A plus 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 players in the game, those two guys are in that category. I don't think Vladdy Jr. is in the same Shohei and Juan Soto realm. But I would like to see them get a deal done with their own homegrown superstar. He's an A plus player in this league. Let's get it done. I get you want your in on those free agents, but when you have a guy in-house that has said all the right things about wanting to play there, wanting to bring a World Series to Toronto, and wanting to be a part of the team for the rest of his career, I mean, it's falling into your lap. And I know it's easy for me to say because it's not $500 million coming out of my pocket, but like, come on, let's get a deal done with your own guy. The place, the city loves him. The team loves him. Let's get it done. And I do hope it gets done.
Yeah. Easy to say for all of us, right? Like easy to say, hey, I'd love to see him. I'd love to see them just make the offer for Vlad, what he wants, and just say, do you really want it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yep. Like, I'd like to at least get the finality of that, because it's possible that Vlad just wants to see what free agency looks like. And he's floating out numbers that, I don't know, may or may not be somewhat of a bluff. I'd like to just end that.
Which is like fine. If it's as he wants to do, that's fine. He's earned that right. It's like,
and to Ben's point, like, he's not asking for what Soto was offered by the Blue Jays. He's asking for what, you know, he believes he's worth right now, which is less, again, than what the Blue Jays were offering those two players in each of the last two off seasons. But we'll see if they make any progress towards an extension of the coming weeks here. Let's go to the Dodgers here, Ben. A predictably hot start for them, for Shohei Ohtani. I want to know, like, get in the mind of Shohei this year, because this is a different year now, because, you know, he's accomplished. Like, he won the World Series last year. Maybe there's less of a stress to be, like, the everything for this team, because they just brought in a bunch of pitchers on a super team, and he could just be Shohei Ohtani. Like, we were just talking in the last block, when you win, it makes things easier. Do you think it's going to be easier for Shohei now that he's won?
Well, I don't know how you can, three games in, say that that's not the case for him. I mean, he's homered in two of them. He's getting hits in all of them. And it now feels like, look, we have the best player in the game. You have a guy that is perhaps the, you know, I speak a little more highly of him than I think maybe the rest of the world is, but perhaps the most talented player we've ever seen, perhaps the greatest of all time when all is said and done. And the only thing left for him really was, okay, well, he hasn't won anything. He plays for the Angels. He can't win. Yes, he's an MVP. Yes, he pitches well. He hits well. Great. But let's see him in the playoffs. And then he goes into the playoffs and, you know, hits a massive home run for them in game one against the Padres, and obviously ends up getting hurt for the World Series, but then he wins the World Series. Now he's a World Series champion. So now I think what you have, because he's there for the long haul, he's there for a decade longer. For me, it now turns to, well, what's left for Shohei? And I think you just build on a legacy at this point and truly push to become the greatest of all time. And if you keep winning championships and hitting 50 homers and pitching with a 3 ERA, for, I don't know, if you can do that, who knows how long he can pitch and hit at the same time, right? Does it last another 2 years? Is it another 5 years? Is it 10 years? Probably not, but the longer the better for the game of baseball. But what's left is for him to keep doing what he's doing and putting together one of the greatest careers that we've ever seen. So I do think it becomes easier. The pressure is off of winning a World Series. The only pressure left, you could say, is getting back to the World Series and him performing well. He had one shoulder last World Series, so let's get back to it and win a World Series MVP. But yeah, I think a lot of the pressure is off, and we're just watching him now be the greatest that I've ever seen. I say Barry Bonds is the best hitter of all time. Shohei Ohtani is the greatest player that I've ever seen all around. It's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue. I mean, some would say that Juan Soto is a generational hitter in his own right, and last night he goes 1-for-3 with two walks, but he struck out with the game on the line. And when you're making $765 million and you play in New York, that's not always going to fly. My question is, Yankee fans are notorious for getting on players that are underperforming. And obviously I'm being facetious. It's one game. It's not that big of a deal. But if you sign a $765 million deal, it's not always rosy. Are the New York Mets fans as prone to getting on players who aren't living up to their contract as much as maybe Yankees fans would?
I wouldn't say it's as much as Yankees fans. I look back to, I think Francisco Lindor is a great example. He signed that massive deal there. He wasn't very good at the, you know, he was pretty bad when he first signed. I think he was putting a lot of pressure on himself, and it took a while. You started to hear the boo birds come out and the critics, but I mean, you sign a massive deal like Lindor for the New York Yankees and you go 0 for 10 in the first series and you'll start hearing it from them. I mean, Aaron Judge had arguably the greatest offensive season we've ever seen 2 years ago, and he went into the playoffs and couldn't hit water if he fell out of a boat, and they were booing him in like game one or two of the playoffs. And I'm just like, man, these fans turn on you quick. So I don't think Mets fans are the same as Yankees fans in that instance. I don't.
So I'm looking at the Mets roster and like, yeah, obviously they had a great run last year and it felt like there was something magical about what they were doing. But you know, after leveling up in the way that they did, that being the Dodgers and the other teams that have improved in the National League, it feels like all the talent seems to be now saturating that league. It feels like they're definitely not first pick, maybe not second or third pick, to actually compete in the end with the Dodgers. If you had to pick a team, a horse to run against Shohei and company, who do you think's best equipped?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't think you can go wrong with any of the three teams in the NL East, Braves, Phillies, Mets. I do think all of them can compete. I guess a tier up. In my prediction, I have the Braves winning the World Series. I certainly think they can beat the Dodgers, obviously, for them to win the World Series. They probably have to go through them at some point. But look, it's a game of baseball. In a five-game series, if you can run out two studs, so let's say the Braves are healthy, as with any team, but if you can run out Spencer Strider and Chris Sale, and I think Schwellenbach's going to be great this year. Ronaldo Lopez was an all-star, but you can run out some aces against the Dodgers with a really, really talented lineup. You can absolutely beat them. I would say, I don't know if you get to a handful, but there's three or four teams that can certainly take down the Dodgers. I think the Mets are part of that. If they really want to be good enough to beat the Dodgers and win a World Series, I think they're a stud pitcher away. I know Manaea's hurt, but that's not really – yes, he's good, but I'm talking like an ace of a staff type guy. And do they add that at the trade deadline? I don't know, but as we sit right now, I wouldn't put the Mets at the top of my list of teams in the NL to beat the Dodgers. I would put the Braves a tick higher, perhaps the Phillies a tick higher as well, and then Padres and D-backs out there in the NL West are going to be good too.
Hey, it was great talking to you, Ben. Have a great season, and yeah, we'll see if the Dodgers can make some history this year.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having us.
That's Ben Verlander of Fox Sports and the Flipping Bats podcast. Yeah, I mean, like, the Dodgers, I know, like, I've seen a lot of predictions obviously the last couple weeks, and there's been a lot of zagging. There's been a lot of people picking the Braves, picking other teams, going away from the Dodgers. You don't have to be the contrarian. Like, this is an unbelievable team the Dodgers have assembled, and I feel like the only real chance to get them is in the five-game series in the divisional. Like, it's going to be really difficult when the sample is big, a seven-game series sample, to beat a team like the Dodgers. If you have a really good pitcher in five games, mm-hmm. a five-game series, to mm-hmm. get them, maybe. But I don't know. I don't see any cracks.
No, it feels like it would have to be like just catastrophic injuries, you know, throughout the lineup, really. Because even if they lose two, three guys, it's like they can withstand that.
He mentioned it. Shohei, I completely forgot about it. Shohei, bum shoulder.
Yeah.
They were forced to use openers and bullpen games on the regular. They really had one starter that they had any confidence in mm-hmm. Yamamoto last year. Then they bring in Sasaki. They get Glasnow back. They bring in Blake Snell, who won a Cy Young a couple years ago. Absurd. Like, they have fixed their problems tenfold.
Yeah, it's interesting because last year, you mentioned the problems. They had the lowest winning percentage that they had had since 2016, and they still won the World Series. So you could look at that two ways. It's like, well, they were probably the best team even last year, and it wasn't always rosy, but then they go out and they're even that much better than the team from a year ago now. So it feels like it's a foregone conclusion. And if it does work out that way, where the Dodgers win 105, 110 games a season, and they ease to the World Series, I think Major League Baseball might have a real problem on their hands where you have to look at the competitive balance of the league and say, is this what we want? Do we want to stack teams like this? Then you could also make the argument that the Mets spend more than them anyway. So it's a tough pickle, but you don't want that for a league. You don't want one team to just be able to walk through everybody else and win a World Series.
I think super teams can be good. I think if, you know, maybe there'll be fatigue. There can't not be fatigue in a baseball season.
Yep.
But if they are chasing history, they're chasing the all-time wins record.
It's cool.
With Shohei Ohtani and all the attention Japan is going to give to that story and how they're going to be kind of standalone every single night, given that they're playing on the West Coast. I don't know. I think it's going to be good if they are relevant deep into a regular season, then, of course, into the playoffs. I think that's going to be a good thing for baseball.
Helps that it's LA, for
they
sure.
They haven't won enough yet for it to be bad. Maybe if it continues.
And we remember that when, you know, 5, 10, 15 years down the road, you tend to remember the great teams and the dynasties.
You just need a foil.
The one-offs.
Like we were watching, we're sickos, and we're watching Golden State versus LeBron highlights. You need the LeBron, right?
Yeah.
You got the Golden State Warriors. Who out of the American League is going to be LeBron?
Yeah.
I don't see one.
Great point.
This year, especially in the American League East. Okay, so we've had 20 years of Sid and Ovi.
Yeah.
We've had two guys that are, I guess, chasing records, but one has been with far more fanfare. That is Alexander Ovechkin, now 6 goals away from breaking Wayne Gretzky's record. I think the Caps have 10 games remaining, so not a fait accompli yet. But Sidney Crosby beating Gretzky's record with 20 seasons above a point per game. Is there any reason to believe that it's more impressive what Sid's done compared to Ovi's chase?
So it seemed like a ridiculous take when we had this earlier in the day, and I said the Sid point per game for 20 straight years might be the most ridiculous stat I've ever heard. And I don't think it's necessarily more impressive than what Ovechkin has done. I mean, he's going to break the all-time goals record. Like that's pretty much a standalone in the National Hockey League. But you've heard about it the whole way. Like, we've known that this has been coming. So you're almost used to the fact that Ovechkin's going to accomplish the goal. I felt Crosby last night when he broke the record, it kind of snuck up on me just how unbelievable this guy has been. We know it's Sidney Crosby. But when you hear that stat, 20 years, think of the injuries that he's battled through. 20 years of a point per game. He hasn't had one year in his career where he wasn't a point per game guy. That level of consistency really seems to me like it's only rivaled by who? LeBron, who's still getting it done at the ridiculous age of 40. So I think Sid just deserves a lot of credit. Obviously, it's not more impressive than what Ovi's doing, but in terms of things that just kind of blow you away when you hear it for the first time, that's what happened to me last night. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, it's definitely not as sexy as the goals, but no. I mean, I look forward a little bit because Sid's going to play for a little while longer. And if this continues, are we getting to 24 years
per game? Unbelievable.
A quarter really century is. Of doing this? Like, is that possible?
Even in those years where goal scoring wasn't as prolific as it
is
now.
And there were some hairy moments, right? There were seasons cut short by injury, serious injury, and he grinded through and barely got over a couple times. There's been like lockouts and shortened seasons and COVID and all that stuff.
Yep.
And I guess
still
the,
doing
the
it.
Main consistency
bad teams.
Through it all, he just continues to be
the man.
Above a point per game and a positive, beyond a positive. Let's do bets here before we tee up the Orioles and Blue Jays one more time. 8.5 was the over-under tonight, Blue Jays and Orioles. Gausman versus Charlie Morton. I guess two pitchers these teams are relying on. But whenever the Orioles are at Rogers Center, I'm going to take the over. So -110. And then in the NCAA tournament, Tennessee and Houston have been on a collision course this entire time. I'll take the money line parlay tonight, -113, with the number 1 and 2 seeds in their region getting through.
I love all of that. I am a little bit more on tilt. I'm going Yordan Alvarez to hit a home run tonight because he's only played a game, doesn't have one yet, and I think he's going to get one tonight playing in a dome. Just going to tee off the lefty. 35 bombs basically every single year.
One of the best, when he's healthy. One of the best healthy. Swings in just, baseball.
Just disgusting.
For sure.
Yeah, give me Yordan Alvarez.
So it will be Kevin Gausman versus Charlie Morton. Some changes to the Blue Jays lineup. We'll see Nathan Lucas start in center. Will Wagner will shift to third after DHing yesterday. You can hear that game on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, and also catch Brad Marchand's debut amazing. On Sportsnet with Utah and the Florida Panthers. Have a good weekend, everyone. Thanks for doing this,
you
Jesse.
Have a great weekend. Thanks, a lot of fun, buddy. Thanks.
I appreciate it. We'll chat soon.